Cultural differences in a crisis situation, relevant or not? And how do you deal with them when managing a crisis and time is of the essence? For example, when due to riots, your office more or less burned down? You're gonna hear all about this in today's episode with Konstantinos. Konstantinos is from Greece and has been living in Sweden for 10 years. He has a very solid corporate background where he has worked in different executive roles for multinational organizations. He's a people and culture expert and believes that empathy is key to empowering employees. But he has been in charge for security, safety, and crisis management for a long time. Is empathy sufficient in those scenarios? You're gonna hear all about his move from Athens to Sweden, working for one of the most consensus-driven cultures in the world, and how he sees his future. It's gonna be promising. Enjoy! Good afternoon, Konstantinos.
Good afternoon.
Thank you super, very, very much for joining me today, and a very, very warm welcome to my podcast. You are
happy to be here.
I'm super happy to have you here. You're born in Greece. You grew up in a cross-cultural family. You've been living in Stockholm for, let's say, more than a decade now. And let's say you have a very, very solid corporate background. And you have worked in different executive roles in multinational organizations. And I am beyond excited to have you here. I'm super curious to hear all about it. And I'm going to start by asking, where are you today?
Thank you for the amazing intro. I'm very happy to be here with you, of course. I'm joining today from Stockholm, Sweden. It's afternoon, already getting dark, as it always happens during the winter months here in Sweden.
How has that been for you? Because you moved from Athens to Stockholm. I've never been to Athens, but in my imagination, this is from sunny and vibrant to dark winters.
It's been a challenge, to say the least. Exactly as you describe it, Athens, Greece, you know, you have like the beaches very near. It's always sunny. Even in December, you might have days with 18 degrees. And then moving here to very shorter days, especially during winter, most times snowing, raining. But then, of course, you have the benefit of the summer where, you know, then we have very long days here, and it's actually a very unique experience. But definitely the first year always takes a toll on you until you acclimatize to this very big change.
And can you share a little bit about why did you move to Stockholm? When? Take us with you on the journey.
Of course. It was somewhere in February 2013 when I moved here, when I got a position in the head office of a global Swedish company on retail. And I came here actually without even negotiating my salary. I just said yes when I got the position. I was extremely happy to move away from Greece. And being, as you said, brought up into multicultural environment, my mother from Austria, my father Greek. I think I'm more European than Greek sometimes. So moving here in Sweden, it was something that I was aiming to achieve. And, you know, it was like a goal that marked, a decade now. That's already, time goes by so quick.
It is, yeah. It's actually 10 years, or let's say more or less 10 years, right? Yeah, it's a decade.
Right.
And you said I was happy to leave Greece. Would you want to elaborate on that?
Yes. Greece, as you said, it's lovely for the weather, the summer, vacation, the island, the food. But from a cultural perspective, it's very challenging, as it is a very old culture. I mean, you know, Greeks have been around for millennia, and in combination with religion, some of the aspects in daily life might be a little bit old-fashioned, not as much as in the new life, inclusivity, diversity, still, you know, work in process there. And then moving to Sweden, one of the countries that has been, you know, the more diverse than some other countries very early in early stages, late 70s, you know, 80s, when they had so many waves of people migrating from very different cultures, felt always like a safe haven and a very nice place to be.
Yeah, I mean, I can see that. And the, let's say, the cultural history of Greece as well is of course very, very impressive and globally known, but I can imagine living there, it comes with pros and cons. There's always a flip side of the coin, I guess.
Correct. One of the cons, just to give you a fun example.
Oh, I would love that.
You know, the Greek language has been one of the oldest languages around the world that has not been impacted as much in the years. So even today, if very modern Greek goes into, you know, ancient market or wherever we have ruins, and you can see something written in old Greek, you are still able to read it. You might not be able to fully understand what it says because the meaning of the words have changed and elaborated, but you can still read it. So I still find it fascinating. Every time I go to the Acropolis Museum, in the entrance, there's like a very big tome there where it's like a very long text that I can still read. I can understand 10% of it, but still, you know, it's very impressive if you think about it.
Yeah, you have to be kidding me. So you're able to read it, but let's say the actual meaning has, the meaning has shifted, has changed.
Right.
I had no clue. Very cool.
Yeah.
Very cool. And so you moved to Stockholm or to Sweden for a position, for a work-related reason. And was that your aim? I mean, can you share a bit on what you were doing in Greece, or how was that transition work-wise?
Yeah. So since I've finished my studies, business administration and management, I had the idea that I really want to live abroad, not knowing exactly where. Of course, Austria was one of the countries in the list. But then due to life that happens without you planning, there were some circumstances around some family issues and some other things that actually hindered me from actually, you know, making the step to move abroad for maybe a master's degree or something. So instead of further studies, then I started working at retail in some companies. And then in 2007, I joined the Swedish company that actually opened in Greece that year. I was one of the first 20 employees. And that was like, I still remember after my first year, when I had my performance review with my country manager at the time, he was like, and what is your, you know, 3 to 5 years goals? And from year one, I said, I want to move abroad. I'm open to kind of wherever. but I'm really determined to do what the company wants me. I can travel everywhere they want me, as long as, you know, I kind of leave this country. At that time, I was close to my 30s. So, you know, it was like also kind of, I was looking ahead like, ooh, it's a new decade. I need to finally, you know, achieve my dreams living abroad. It took 6 years until that finally got in place.
I think six on a lifetime, really, if you think about it. I mean, you have been in Sweden now for, let's say, more or less 10, you know? I mean, if you put it in perspective, it's not that long, really.
Yeah, you're right. Maybe I was very much anticipating what happening earlier.
Yeah, exactly.
But everything happens for a reason, you know, the timing. So it was a very good timing at that point, because then I was offered a job. I didn't apply for a job. So it was way easier for me to move to this new country with, you know, job security and everything, instead of me going in a country where maybe, you know, I wouldn't feel that confident. And of course, what made it easier was that those 6 years, I traveled often to Sweden for meetings and trainings. So I saw Sweden at their best during summer, but also at the darkest, which is like January, minus 17, snow until your knees and all of that. I knew for sure where I was getting myself to. And I also kind of was prepared, not fully, but a little bit prepared about the Swedish culture. Of course, that was a little bit more a slash that I expected.
Would you say you underestimated certain things?
I underestimated not as much the work culture. That was a little bit easier. But the actual day-to-day culture, socializing, making friends, that was way an underestimation from my inside.
Yeah. Would you want to share an example or something that you faced that you felt?
Yes. So I moved here, as I said, mid of February. I'm like the first days in the office. Everyone has been very friendly, really embracing, taking me in, you know, into the team, showing me like, oh, here's the restaurant. This is where we go for coffee, you know, all the need to knows in your day-to-day work life. And then it's a Thursday and one of the colleagues says, oh, let's go for a beer. And I'm like happy, like, oh my God, it's the day four. And, you know, we are already getting there, breaking the barriers. They ask me for a beer. I'm like, yeah, great. Like, what time do you finish today? And then the response was, oh, no, no, I didn't mean today. Let's plan it. Maybe in 2 weeks from now to meet it. But I need to put it in my schedule. I cannot do this today. I'm already booked from 3 weeks ago. So that kind of really struck me because in the Greek culture, you just call up your friends and say, hey, what are you doing now? Do you want to go for a coffee? And you just go for a coffee. So planning ahead 2 to 3 weeks for just a beer, not a proper after work with a colleague, that was already like a first slap the first week.
Yeah.
When I moved here.
Yeah, I can imagine. And I can understand that, you know, from a personal level, this approach of time and flexibility is more complicated, where work, because you were saying in the beginning that work-wise you felt the transition was a bit easier. And I think if you look at the Swedish culture and you, in this case, compare it to the Greek culture, the approach towards time is much more linear. So it's much more planning ahead things, the preference of things happening in, let's say, a chronological order, where in Greece, this is much more flexible. There's a more flexible approach to time, which work-wise could be, let's say, a blessing, a change for the greater good. But I can see that personally, that, of course, is more complicated. Would you say that on a personal level, if someone from abroad would move to Greece, how would that situation be? If a stranger, a foreigner moves to Greece?
Yeah, I can definitely reflect having also those 6 years when I was working for the Swedish company in Greece, we had several expats moving from either Sweden, Spain, Belgium. And at some point, you know, Greeks also love gossiping, like chit chat, you know, and also kind of like, I want to know what you're doing in your private life. You know, I want to know you, not only that are a controller or you that are a security manager.
Yeah.
I really want to know you as a person. And I think that some of those cultural habits, I saw that some of the colleagues back then, they felt that we are very intrusive in the questions we're doing or the discussion that we're doing, because maybe they were not feeling confident sharing as much. You know, maybe they were more private. Also that kind of like, hey, let's go for drinks today.
Yeah.
Some reactions I've heard in the office back then was like, you guys only go for drinks here? Like every day? Don't you like flannel after work. But you know, when it's like 40 degrees and it's summer in Athens, you don't want to go home. You want to go for drinks in a rooftop or somewhere. So I've seen people having some difficulty adjusting with this kind of intrusive, as I said, mindset, cultural behavior that Greeks have. But at the same time, to say also something positive, everyone really enjoyed the hospitality.
Yeah.
I think it's in the Greek blood to really take care of people that are visiting Greece, even for short term or long term. So I remember, you know, all of us were kind of happily sacrificing our weekends to show them around, like, you know, the Acropolis, or to go with them in the city center, or to do like day trips in the nearby islands. But we don't do it because we feel obligated. We feel because we really want to share and create the best experience for the foreigner in that sense.
Yeah. Oh wow. And it sounds really, really promising. Really. I mean, rooftops, drinks in summer, and welcoming people. Where can I sign? Really. It sounds great. And I mean, you were saying earlier that you felt work-wise the transition was a little bit, let's say, less culture shocking, which makes sense because you've been working for that company, obviously, from Greece already. But how, can you tell us a little bit about how that transition has been? Because I, for example, know that Sweden is one of the most consensus-driven countries in the world. Not the most, but one of the most. And which is very different in Greece.
Yeah. And I can explain a little bit why it was easier, but then later on, it became a little bit definitely more difficult. Within a sales market, decision-making has to be fast. So when I was in Greece as a security manager, we had the majority of the people in the executive team being Greeks, but then we always had a mix, and the country manager was Swedish. So it was kind of like minority, you know, like one person, all of us, quick decision-making, and also because of the business need, it was kind of easier to reach in a decision on what to do, create actions, etc. Later on, when I started to collaborate in international projects with the Swedish team, the security team, I started feeling that, oh, okay, head office is not as quick as as we are supposed to be in the sales country.
Yeah.
But then I thought, you know, oh, it's the distance. I was, you know, in Greece, supporting openings in Bulgaria, Russia, Turkey, Romania. So, you know, I always felt this remote. And back in the days, you know, we only had WebEx. We didn't have videos. We didn't have Zoom. We didn't have Teams. You know, it was very seldom you saw a person in a meeting. It was either by phone or very simple WebEx. So then moving here, I was like, okay, decision-making might be a bit slow. As soon as maybe after the first 6 months, I held a global role. So I had to be in meetings with executive teams, not only the security manager, but some other global functions. Unfortunately, at that time, everyone was Swede. From those high managers in this CXO team. So until we reached decision, to your point, we were having a meeting to present what is the problem. Okay, those are the options. And then someone was going, oh, but this person is not here today. Let's pause this meeting. Let's wait because this is a very important stakeholder. That person should be included. I'm like, okay. Then I was planning the next meeting. I was sure to invite everyone. So that was a very big lesson learned in the first 6 months to a year. Always have the right people in the room. And then everyone is there. I was like, okay, this is it. We're going to make it. We're going to decide. And then in the end, because it was kind of half-half between them, all Swedes again, then the one person goes, oh, you know, I think we need more time to reflect. Let's have another meeting for the decision making.
Yeah.
So then that was in a span of a month for something that could have easily been resolved faster.
Yeah.
To create, you know, the business impact that was needed.
Yeah.
So I learned after that that, you know, to kind of spend more time preparing for those meetings, the decision-making meetings, invite the right stakeholders, and also bring a lot of storytelling and examples of pros and cons, because they really want to see everything. I guess this is also a cultural thing. Before they make a decision, they cannot weigh on the gut feeling. They really want to have a little bit of more detail before taking a decision. Did it improve? Not really. In my 7 years in the head office, not really. Not as much.
But I mean, I can imagine that maybe, let's say, the situation or the way of doing things haven't changed in those 7 years, but you most probably have found a way to adapt more to it or have more realistic expectations. This is correct. A pure assumption, but...
You're absolutely spot on. It took a lot of kumbaya in myself to breathe out.
Can I make a note out of this kumbaya? Because I think this is fantastic. This I'm going to use.
Because, you know, I was going into meetings that decisions were not done. Instead of me becoming very straightforward, that always was an awkward moment. For me, being straightforward is day-to-day life.
Yeah.
For some of the Swedes, that is something, again, in the limit of not offending them, but they cannot handle them. It increases their stress limit. So then after, I think, year three, I was like, okay, this is one more meeting. Just breathe in, breathe out. Next one, we hopefully going to make a decision making.
But I think this is the way to go, because, I mean, if you go into that meeting, you enter that room with the expectation that a decision will not be made, it will save you a lot of frustration. Your let's say, cultural perception is then more realistic, and you will perceive it more as it is rather than what you would expect or what you would prefer, right? Because in cultural relativity, it's all about the perception. So just to hook on your example on, you know, being straightforward or direct, it's true that Swedes are less comfortable with direct negative feedback. And so me being Dutch, and I will take an example very close to home, because Dutch is a culture globally known as being very direct, and also perceived as relatively rude, depending on the cultural dynamics. But Swedes are less comfortable with that. And that means that if you would, let's say, take it down a notch, they will receive the feedback as the equivalent as you being as direct as you would normally be. So instead of saying, "I disagree," you could say, "How could we do this slightly different?" And for that specific culture, it's the equivalent to, "I disagree." So it's good to trust on that the message will come across, even if you're, let's say, relatively less direct than you would prefer, basically. But I can see the challenges.
And to add on this, so in my first year performance review again, here in Sweden now, with my current manager at the time, one of the feedback was like, it was two feedback. One, that you need to know when to say no. You're like, you know, killing yourself with too many responsibilities and workload. And then the other was, try not to be as honest. And I was a bit confused. Like, how do you mean it? And he was trying to explain. He was also Swede, but he has lived abroad, so he had a little bit of the he was an advanced Swede, if I may call him like this, because I think when Swedes have lived abroad and then they come back to work in Sweden, they are way different and like very open to straight, honest, constructive feedback. So what he told me is like, yeah, not in the sense of not being honest in per se, but as you said, you know, think different ways to approach it. Try to avoid the conflict. Do questions like, as you just said, you know, okay, but how do you think we should solve it? And he said, you know, in maybe meeting number one and meeting number two, plant the seed of the final outcome you want to achieve. And that was a very good tip, advice that he gave me. And then also in my leadership style, I kind of looked on how I was reacting in some of the situation. And I realized that, wait, I can become a little bit more empathetic, a little bit more, you know, kumbaya, slow down, you know, breathe in, breathe out, and really actively have a discussion that I listen and give the space to the person to express the uncomfortness and what it is, and, you know, not go as direct, but a little bit side approach to any difficult situation.
I mean, it sounds like you really, let's say, nailed your own transition. I mean, I'm really impressed. On the other hand, I mean, I hear you things say as like, in meeting one, plant a seed, in meeting two, you water it, and how to give feedback and how to be a bit more kumbaya. But these things take time. You know, if you need to make fast decisions, or let's say when time is of the essence. I also heard you say, I worked as a security manager and for, you know, in the field of crisis and safety and security. That for me doesn't sound like an industry where always time is, let's say, endlessly. How do you deal with that?
Exactly. The when it's a crisis in security, it's a real crisis, right? I can give you an example there. Back in Greece, in 2008, December, when all these riots, demonstration happened, I'm sure a lot of people will still remember these unfortunate moments.
Yes,
where
I think so, yeah.
Half of the city center was burning. We, at that company I was working at, we lost two stores and the support office of the country because of the fires. So suddenly, you know, we didn't have an office to go. Most of the equipment kind of melted in the desk because of the heat, because the store was below the office. And to your point, you know, we had to take quick decisions. And I'm going to give a bad example and a good example.
I love
so that. Sweden head office said, we need to really send laptops to everyone because now they're working from home. At that time, most of us still had a, you know, an office device, like a PC on the desk.
Yep.
What is the fastest way of doing it? Use FedEx, use, you know, UPS. No, we're going to fly a person with a suitcase with 30 laptops.
Oh,
good idea as a concept and very quick for decision making. So then the person arrives 2 days later with a huge bag. We had a temporary office. He opens the bag. Four laptops were broken during transfer. Four laptops were never set up, so he had to do the setup. So, you know, the quick decision making that was quite out of their linear way of working resulted into not a good example. So then we had, finally in the end, we prioritized who should take a laptop and we they allocate additional laptops to be sent. So that's kind of a Swede trying to be, quick decision making. But because there was not a plan on how to execute it, you know, it didn't really went very well. Then the other part was, as I said, in the support office, we had a Swedish country manager. And he was the first time, it was the first time he was a country manager. He's been area manager before. And then the majority of the other people in the support office, the managers, we were Greek. And, you know, okay, 2-3 days, very sad that things burned. We thankfully didn't have any life threat or no one, you know, lost their life. It was more property damage and a lot of emotion because it was like, you know, 1.5 years after the country opened and the office and the first door was burned. So we gather in the house of the country manager, and he was in a total shock. He couldn't take any decision. He was feeling very threatened, not from us, I mean, from the situation. It was unprecedented for him to be in a country where so much chaos and riots and destruction went on. And so in that meeting, it was the first time after 1.5 years where he said, I'm not gonna have any opinion. You are the locals, you know best what to do. You act on it. So I think that is a very difficult thing for a Swede to say. But at the time, I have so much respect for what he said, because in the end, you know, the rest of the team, we really managed to very quick, as I said, find a temporary office, try to figure out what we're going to do with all our people, reallocating them in other stores. So that was a good example where, you know, a Swede knowing his limits, and he kind of trusted his management team to handle the crisis situation.
Yeah, and I mean, most probably also plays a part that he, you know, let's say he was an expat in Greece. He, you know, you're not completely routined in the way of living in another country, which is not, let's say, your home or your original home. And no, I think it's a beautiful decision. And it probably has not been an easy one. No, I hear you on that one. I definitely hear you on that one. And what do you think has been the key to success in your, you know, all your experiences abroad, your traveling? The key to your, let's say, cross-cultural success?
That's a good question. I always perceived myself as a very people's person, and it was always easy for me to socialize, you know, in the university years, in my jobs. I'm not the most famous kid in school or anything, but easy to socialize. So when growing up, I always took that with me, to socialize and to listen to people, to understand, you know, their situation, where they are. And having the it's kind of a luxury. When I moved here, I traveled to so many different countries. I came across so many different cultures from Australia, Russia, every country in Europe, US, Latin America, and Chile. So I was coming, you know, from the global office, and I was like the global manager. But then as soon as you just are very, as I said, empathetic, you just chat very nicely to people, you create this trust and safety in the communication. So then they're very more open to discuss with you. What are their problems? What are their issues? How can you help them? You know, when I visited in LA, in one of the stores, I really felt that the manager was like stressing out to show that everything is perfect. And at some point, you know, I made a joke about me and my imperfect life and, you know, no one is God. And then I just saw her shoulders like, you know, relaxing. And then she's like, got more open. Then we did a joke about a movie or something. I don't even remember now. And then she started being more honest and like transparent and starting saying, you know, since you're here, how would you deal with this in the stockroom? I really care about my people and their safety and security. And then, you know, we just like did a walk and I just said a suggestion. And she was so, so thankful. And we're still connected actually on Instagram. So from time to time we chat, you know. So a random person came in her store one day, and just because, just respecting others, you know, and listen. I think that's the best you can do, especially when you don't know the culture, what is appropriate, what is not appropriate to say and discuss. Just, you know, it's better to listen more than to speak.
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't have said it better. And I love your approach on, you know, taking yourself and some self-reflection as a starting point in let's say, cross-cultural conversations, leadership, and, you know, let's say maybe taking yourself a little bit less serious, like you said, making a joke and really, really thinking about how do I come across and what is it that I want to achieve, and making others feel more comfortable in that interaction, right? Yeah. What will the future be for you? Is it going to be Stockholm forever? How is your view on this? Maybe you don't know. That's also an answer.
I mean, you never know what life brings, you know, we make plans and God laughs. But
exactly.
But my wish is really to stay in this country in Stockholm. It's with the pros and cons, you know, the cultural differences, as we said, the dark winter. It's still a country where inclusion, diversity is so vivid, so open. Everyone is welcome. Everyone can be whoever they want without anyone criticizing them. And for me, on a personal aspect, this is, you know, a country, a city where I want to live. And stay and grow older. Everything is very organized with a linear, you know, cultural impact. I'm anyway OCD with organization, so that's the things I really love in this country. And I do hope that I can stay here with my husband. We have a very nice apartment. You know, maybe even grow our family and continue to support people in any capacity I can. Would that be in a new job, you know, the LGBTQ plus community? I just really want to be there for people that are having it difficult.
I have goosebumps. I think it's I mean, it's very clear looking at your facial expression, hearing what you say, is that it, yeah, you have a very genuine interest in people, in adding value to your own life, but definitely also others. And I think it's what we need in the world, because there's, I think all cultures globally agree that when we show genuine interest in each other, that we, you know, you will come further, basically. And the world is going to be a better place to live for all.
Exactly.
And with that, I think this is a great, great, let's say, finalization, summary of a fantastic conversation. I would like to ask you one final question. Looking back at you, let's say 10 years ago, you were in Greece, you were about to move to Sweden, you had some knowledge, but not everything that you know today. Looking back at that point, what would you have wished to know before?
So I wish, that's a good question. What would I wish? I want to wish more. I think I would love, and because it was a work-related transfer, right? I would love, and I would advise every company that is handling expats. I would love if I would have gotten a cultural seminar or whatever that would be, training about the Swedish culture and what are the differences from the culture I was coming from. To be fair, I did have an hour of kind of a PowerPoint presentation about Sweden and very high level, like, cultural things and things that are like traditions. But if someone would have spent a little bit more time explaining, like, hey, where are you coming from this country? Okay, you're moving to Sweden. Oh, there is a culture map. Oh, those are the different beacon issues. That would have gained me so much time, energy, frustration on my end. And I think, you know, it would have really smoothened the transition, both from on the work experience, but also the day-to-day life. So if anyone from any company is hearing this, that would be my strong advice to do that, to think about these cultural differences.
Yeah, and I think you make it super clear saying it would have saved me a lot of time. It would have saved me a lot of frustration. You would have probably been happier in your job and a more effective leader, most probably as well. Thank you for your honesty, your transparency, your fantastic examples. I'm gonna definitely use your Kumbaya approach. I think this says it all. And thank you very much for joining today. And we will keep in touch.
Of course, thank you so much for having me.
I hope you have enjoyed hearing Constantino's stories. Want to get in touch with him? Find the details in the show notes. And I can assure you, he's very active on LinkedIn. Curious to learn more on what consensus-driven culture means? How to deal with it when, for example, you come from a more top-down approach culture? Make sure you follow my podcast channel so that you get notified once I upload that episode soon. Take care! I hope to give you a warm welcome to new episodes. And if you have enjoyed listening to my podcast, you would help me a lot by leaving a review or hitting that 5-star button on Spotify. This simply helps for my podcast to be found by others and to spread the awareness on cultural perception. But for now, I'm wishing you a great day, evening, night from wherever or whenever you're listening to this. Ciao!